This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Tonight's presidential debate is shaping up to be as closely watched as the Super Bowl. Let's hope that's not because the public expects it to just be another sporting event, say, a big-time political cage match. The truth is, we really need the American people to be getting seriously engaged in a decision that will shape the future of our country and likely most of our lives for years to come. While there will be doubtless some entertaining moments, what's required is an earnest conversation, one that actually exposes the differences between the two candidates and the resulting choice before us. Of particular, and indeed surpassing importance, will be their competing views on the determinants of our national security, how to defeat the global jihad, stop illegal and dangerous immigration, deter our adversaries, and protect our constitutional republic, its sovereignty, and our freedoms. This is Frank Affney.
Now more with Frank Affney.
Welcome back. We are visiting with Mark Helprin, the author of more books than you can shake a stick at, most of which have been translated into numerous languages, In Sunlight and in Shadow, one of the most recent of them. And I commend all of them to you, as well as his essays, which have appeared in The New Yorker, The New York Times, Atlantic Monthly, and most recently in The Wall Street Journal. He is a prize winner for this work of many eminent awards, including the National Jewish Book Award, the Prix de Rome, and the Peggy Helmerich Distinguished Author Award. Mark, let me pick up on a point that was sort of a theme throughout those first two segments of our program. I'm pretty sure that if there is any attention paid to national security at all in the course of the debate, a feature of it will be the discussion of Vladimir Putin, whether his conduct, his ambitions are something that we can somehow, you know, make common cause with, or whether they are likely to pose for the foreseeable future a very significant threat. What are your thoughts?
In the 90s, I remember speaking to various senators about defense issues. And they all said, well, you know, we have the information and Russia's finished. They'll never be back. And this was just illogical and anti-historical. And since that time, Russia has come back and in a big way. For one, they never neglected their nuclear posture. They have problems with production and execution, but they have very good scientists and they're good technological ideas, and they make sure, they've made sure since the collapse of the Soviet Union, except for a very short period, to put their resources into their nuclear establishment, so that they've been forging ahead when we have been deliberately neglecting and downgrading our nuclear weapons. Now, this dovetails very importantly with what has always been a question that most Americans don't understand, because it's not simply not discussed, and I doubt very much that in the debate, the first debate or the second or the third debate, it'll be brought up, which is Soviet and subsequently Russian nuclear doctrine. Nuclear states have different nuclear thresholds, and the Russian and previously Soviet threshold has always been publicly declared much lower than the American. The Soviets considered nuclear weapons as a type of artillery. And this may have been partially a bluff, simply to scare us. And it came about at a time when we had nuclear artillery too. But we removed our nuclear artillery and announced that we weren't going to use it, you know, in a conventional war. They didn't. They keep tactical nukes even now. The nuclear crisis in the early 80s was based upon their view of short-range nuclear weapons as essential to their entire military posture.
Specifically, intermediate-range nuclear forces, as they were called.
Yeah, the SS-20 at the time. They terrorized Europe with it. And these days, they have been making tremendous show of the use of nuclear weapons. They send the nuclear bombers on practice runs towards the United States. They make demonstrations of short-range weapons, such as when they fired from the Caspian Sea into Syria to show us that these weapons, which are dual nuclear capable, those missiles can be used at a short range. And their doctrine has always been different from ours. Putin rattles his nuclear sabers as a matter of course. And part of the reason that he does this is because Russia does not have soft power, what we call soft power, which is a ridiculous term, by the way, which is simply an excuse for not recognizing that that when you come down to it, diplomacy depends upon force. In the end, diplomacy is a way to avoid force, but you have to have force backing it up. The only soft power that Russia ever had, really, was its gas supplies to Europe. Other than that, and that's, by the way, going to be, that could easily be totally obviated by our gas supplies, which we could send to Europe. But other than that, it has no soft power. So it relies on hard power.
As I understand it, increasingly Putin has really put forward this notion that he can use nuclear weapons early in a conventional conflict to de-escalate that conflict.
Yeah, this is nothing new. This was previous Soviet doctrine, and China is an example of an extreme example of it. Mao said, "Big deal. You know, we don't care if we lose 50 million people. You never know when we would use nuclear weapons." And that's when China had virtually de minimis nuclear weapons. Now it's developing very fast, increasing like crazy as we go down. Now, there's another point to be made here, which is very important. As the United States, in the view of the current president administration, reduces its nuclear arsenal and always asks for more reductions and goes farther than even required, what that does is sends out a message to every small, medium country in the world saying, well, if you just give a little effort, you can have nuclear parity with the United States.
To say nothing of the bigger countries that are going to exceed us if they haven't already done so.
Absolutely. Our efforts at making a non-nuclear world have encouraged proliferation of nuclear weapons in the hands of people like the Iranians, who have much less reluctance to use them.
Yeah, one of the things that you developed very importantly in this, I think, really seminal article in the Wall Street Journal was this idea that we are actually incentivizing people to engage in not only nuclear buildups, but quite possibly the use of them by signaling this kind of irresolution and weakness on our part. And this is, again, at the heart of what it seems to me should be debated very directly. I can't imagine the American people would stand for it if they knew the truth.
But the problem is that not only do we generally incentivize them by reducing our arsenal to the point where it's very possible for them to achieve nuclear parity with the United States, therefore changing the entire complexion of the international system, but in addition, we pay for it. We're paying for the Iranians to develop a nuclear weapon capacity, and we have insured it, and we have agreed in this agreement, which, by the way, they have not signed, but we're keeping to it. They don't have to. They haven't signed it. We have agreed to protect their nuclear infrastructure. The United States has agreed with Iran to protect it, ostensibly from Israel, which is such lunacy that it's so far beyond any sensible thing that people don't even see it as what it is.
Mark, let me just ask you to drill down a little bit further on China. In addition to the nuclear buildup we've been discussing, of course, the Chinese have been engaging in very aggressive behavior in the South China and East China Seas. You've written about this in the past, and I know have given a lot of thought to the future trajectory of China. There are certainly some indications that the Chinese are in trouble economically, politically, the party, and so on. How do you net this out?
The Chinese economic instability, and they still have a growth which is more than three times our economic growth. Granted, they start from a lesser base, but in the past 30 years, their economic growth has been so spectacular that it's not that much of a lesser base. That even though they have three times the economic growth that we have, they are stagnating and they are in a very unstable condition economically. And it's possible that their economy may crash. And I don't see this as being something that we would want because, among other things, what it would do is mean it would mean that the government would have to exert, as it is now, steadily exerting more control and reverting more to a militant patriotism.
Social engineering, as they call it. Mark, we have to pause for just a second. We'll be right back with more with Mark Helprin on the sorts of issues that should be debated tonight and in the future by the American people. Straight ahead.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.